Shut up and sit down.
Ryan Metz of the Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network joins us right now for our weekly hockey chat as we get set for the Penguins as they take on the San Jose Sharks on Tuesday night. You can listen to the game on 105.9 The X with Metz. He'll be doing the intermissions as he always does post-game. You can also check him out at 105.9 The X for Pens Live Weekly on Saturdays. It's a 10:30 face-off in San Jose on Valentine's Day night. Mets, thanks a lot for joining us, as always. Late nights, three of them right in a row. I know that's always your favorite. The Night Owl Club, as it were.
I do enjoy the Night Owl Club, but, you know, we kick that off right at midnight. What I'm not a fan of, Tim, is finishing a post-game show after a 6-0 loss at 2:30 in the morning.
Were the calls angry or non-existent from fans?
There was not much going on, and what's funny is we were joking, saying we should get the great Wayne Gretzky Anderson to play a tape of dogs barking to see if anybody even noticed.
Well, 6-0 and Crosby getting ejected. I'm sure, and I know I've seen it on social media, certainly in the media, Crosby getting tossed out for the first time in his career. That has a lot of Penguins fans barking about what took place, not just from the standpoint of what the call was, why he got thrown out in the first place, but also the lack of retaliation on his behalf by others on the ice. What do you think about that?
Well, but, you know, this is the Penguins story going back how many years, Tim, that you can take it back to the days of Mario Lemieux. They almost never have somebody to retaliate in those situations. And Sid has been put in a spot where he's had to almost always do those kinds of things on his own behalf. And in that game, he took the cross check. He goes down, and it seemed like the two of them were arguing at each other a little bit, he and Mikey Anderson. And I don't know exactly what the official said or did in the moment. And he gave him the first 10. And then I kind of read Crosby's lips, and it looked like he used one of the George Carlin dirty words. And according to Phil Bork, when you do that in the direction of the official, the misconduct usually follows up. And that's what happened to Sid there. And from what I understand, Tim, there's a lot of history, and I don't know that I've noticed it as much, but Garrett Rank, the referee in this one, one of the two referees, is somebody that's kind of not necessarily had a vendetta, but the Penguins and he don't see eye to eye quite often. And there's usually some of these eyebrow raising type of calls like what happened to Sidney Crosby. And does that mean that someday somehow they're going to get somebody in to help Sid? I doubt it, because it's just not in their DNA, but I still believe they would be best served to have somebody specifically at their ages to kind of get the backs of Sidney Crosby, of Genny Malkin, and Chris Letang, because they always end up in the middle of these situations, and they're usually doing the fighting on their own.
So let's talk about then, like what you said, are they going to go out and get somebody to play that role? My guess is no. The last time they did, it was Ryan Reeves, and then Sullivan wouldn't play him, so we all know how that transpired, but with all their other needs, I just can't see them addressing that as a primary concern.
No, unless you're going to find a way to get one of the Tkachuk brothers, which that's not going to happen, because then you kill two birds with one stone, because he can play in all situations, score. You know, maybe they can pull the old Serpentor move from G.I. Joe and go to the tombs of guys like Rick Tocchet and all these other ones and make yourself a super player with their DNA, because I don't know that they exist right now. I mean, the last time I truly remember the Penguins having a guy who could do it all, fight, score, be out there as a protector, was somebody like Rick Tocchet. And Mario Lemieux was never more protected, Tim, than when he played with Rick Tocchet and Kevin Stevens. That trio together, he wasn't getting knocked around near as much as he did earlier in his career. Now, all that said, I just don't know that they're going to find a way to do that. I still don't believe that they're going to find a way to do much. However, most of the national media guys now, I don't know if you noticed, this worm has turned over the last 2 weeks. Everyone's talking about the Penguins going all in. I saw the fourthperiod.com, Dave Pagnotta, who's always all over SiriusXM and does a lot of stuff nationally, used to do NBC stuff, and even NHL Network. On his website, they're connecting the Penguins to Jacob Chychrun, which I doubt is a possibility. But boy, if they're in the conversations for big names such as that, who knows? Maybe they do have delusions of grandeur of going all in with a chance to make a run at something, because that's kind of what they agreed to do over the summer.
I don't know how they do that without sending out a first-round pick or even maybe a second-round pick to take some salary back in exchange. How else do you do it?
No, I agree with you. I think when you look at their situation, their cap space is – gone down by $100 maybe. I think the last time we talked, it was $18,540. It's now $18,430. And when you look at that, they don't really have any room to move. So as you just mentioned, you'd have to send contracts out. And especially if you're going to get somebody to take the contracts that you want off the books to give yourself room to move, that's maybe pointing a big finger at somebody like Kasperi Kapanen with his $3.2 million cap hit, Brock McGinn with his $2.75 million cap hit, Danton Heinen with the $1 million cap hit. Jeff Carter comes to mind with a $3.125 million. He's all of a sudden coming out of the break, has looked a little better again. He was feisty against the Avalanche. He did what he did with Cal Makar. He scored a goal for the first time in 12 games, which was also his first point in 12. And he's still been solid in the faceoff circle. And I don't believe he's going anywhere, even if that wasn't the case, because of the handshake, wink, and nod situations he has with Ron Hextall. But all that said, I believe that a couple of the names I mentioned would have to be tossed in a trade that you make. Plus, it's probably going to cost something like your first-round pick. I wouldn't be shocked if you suddenly saw Brian Rust's name come up in conversations. Teddy Bluger's name is probably up in conversations. And don't look now, I wouldn't be too surprised if they tried to maybe get Brian Dumoulin involved with something, because he has $4.1 million. And yes, he's played better as of late, but he hasn't necessarily been himself all season. And if you're making a trade for somebody like another defenseman, maybe you can get away with making that move.
How have you felt about their overall style of play since they got out on the road and played their first two games? Because the first game against the Ducks was good. They just stink. So, I mean, I want to put a little bit of an asterisk on it. And then, you know, I also kind of want to put an asterisk on the LA game. Dustin Brown gets a statue, I guess, and his number retired, and that has everybody fired up there, and the Kings are pretty decent. So, I don't know, I feel like they got opposite ends of the spectrum of what to expect as far as competition goes. Now they get a Sharks team that they should beat, but then again, we said the same thing about the Sharks when the Sharks came here and beat them in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that was one of their worst losses of the season, I would say. And honestly, Tim, when you look back at the Ducks game, they didn't make it the first one when the Penguins beat them in Pittsburgh. They didn't make it easy on the Penguins either. I mean, that was one of those ones that kind of came down to the wire, and you know, they pulled it off, but it hasn't been easy for them. Now, they went into Anaheim and really took it to the Ducks. They rolled up 25 shots in the first period. Here's a stat for you. There's 11 games this season in which the Penguins overall for the night had 25 or less shots, including the game against the Kings the other night. So they put up 25 in one period against the Ducks. Looked like it was easy for them. Kind of let their guard down late, let up a couple goals, but were able to just handily walk through that. I didn't think they deserved the Colorado game. But even saying that, and the most remarkable thing I'd seen all season, they outshot the Avalanche 14-2 in the final 6 minutes and 20 seconds of the game to get it tied up. I don't know that I've ever seen something like that happen, because when I left to go downstairs, they had about three or four shots on goal, and then they did that. So in that period. So it was just insane. So I think that the Sharks game is almost a trap situation for them, because if they lose that one, you're going then to the team that's nipping at your heels, the Islanders, to play them in their building with Bo Horvat on board now. Their offense looks better than it did before. Now, they've lost a few to do the Penguins a couple favors over the weekend, and I didn't realize how many games the Penguins actually have in hand on them. I thought they were a little bit more close in terms of the games. The Islanders have already played 56, and the Penguins only 52. And the Penguins have the 1-point lead. So that helps the Penguins there. But this week in general is going to be big for them, probably informing what they need to do going into the trade deadline. Because if you squeak by the Sharks and then lose to the Islanders, you again may be out of the playoffs come next weekend. And you're then, what, 2 weeks away from the deadline, which would be 2 weeks from this Friday. So I think that they definitely have some big time decisions to make.
How about the goaltending? It looks like Jarry is still day-to-day, but Sullivan didn't rule out the possibility that he could play in San Jose. How much would that help?
I think it would be huge. To me, based on what I've seen, if Jarry is not going to be healthy and they don't have him at their disposal, Tim, they're cooked. They're probably in a tough spot even with Jarry, but at least I feel like he gives them a chance night in and night out. Casey DeSmith looked pretty darn good over the game against the Avalanche and then part of the Ducks game. But if you go the final period against the Ducks and then the Kings game, he let up 5 goals on the last 28 shots he's faced, because he let up the goals against the Ducks and then he let up 3 against them. So for me, he just doesn't look very good right now. Jarry, for, you know, to his credit, almost every night makes the first save, usually the second, makes some big saves in the game. Whereas I get it, you know, Casey's more of a backup goaltender. He's not going to be able to do that all the time, but you still think he can go out there and steal one for you from time to time. I haven't seen him, you know, maybe the Avalanche game aside, I haven't seen him steal a game for the Penguins this season. And actually it's been a couple years since he really stole one. The last time I saw him play well enough to do that was probably game one against the Rangers last year in the playoffs, and he wasn't able to finish it out. So I think they are cooked without Tristan Jarry. So getting him back would be an awesome situation for them. And I still fully believe now if Jarry's not going to be ready, I'm sure Ron Hextall, when he's making phone calls, assuming he's making phone calls to do something other than maybe order up a pizza or something, he's going to be looking to get a goaltender maybe here if Jarry's not ready either, because they can't be thrilled with what they're seeing from their backups.
Mets, what do you think of that Horvat acquisition by the Islanders?
I like it. I don't know that I like the contract that he signed, simply based on the fact that you're rewarding a guy in a career year, which, boy, it's just amazing how often that happens, that when a guy is going into a contract year, they just find a way to do what he's doing. And he's having an outstanding season. But they go out there and sign him starting next year, $8.5 million, and it's going to take them all the way through the 30-31 season, Tim. So that's a lot of money to have tied up in a guy that's 27 right now. But I think it just looks great. They put him right in on the top line. He scored a goal, a big goal against the Canucks in the return game to play them the other night. He looks like he's fitting in nicely there. And I think that's going to take some pressure off of Matt Barzal, because he's never really truly developed into the goal scorer that they wanted him to be. He still was a number one type center for them, but he wasn't doing that. And number one center score goals, and that's what Bo Horvat's doing this season. So I did like the move for them. And I think it makes them dangerous, because when you look down the middle now, they have Horvat, Barzal, Cizikas is on their fourth line, and I forget who they have on their third line now. I had the name. Pageau. So when you have those four guys down the middle, that's as solid a crop of centers as any team in the league has.
And how about that trade for Tarasenko going to the Rangers? First of all, give me your impressions about how you think he can fit in there, and also your reaction to what Patrick Kane had to say the next day. It was sort of like, oh, man, that's where I wanted to go. Like, just so openly talking about it kind of made me laugh. I mean, I get it. I'm not surprised by it. I'm not going to be Pollyanna-ish about it, but it kind of made me chuckle.
I'm with you there, Tim. I was kind of – you usually don't see somebody so openly talk like that when it's not going to be looked at as like a tampering. And I guess a player can say whatever he wants. And if I'm Chicago, I'm kind of sitting there with my tail between my legs, because you know that he wants out anyway. Well, it's probably a tough decision. But that said, he's like, damn it. Like you said, the team I wanted to go to, I can't now. But Tarasenko goes right in. Has looked pretty good. He's already collaborated with the Breadman on a few goals in terms of how they played together. He scored in his first game, 2 minutes plus into it. If you look at the line combinations, the way they're listed officially online for their last practice, he's up on a line with Zibanejad and Chris Kreider now, which gives you a pretty solid first line, which now allows Panarin, Trocheck, and Vesey to be on your second line. Then you got that kid line behind them that was so solid against the Penguins. Lafreniere's finally woken up a little bit and started to look more like the guy he was in the playoffs. Filippito's really coming into his own. So I just think that they look a lot more dangerous right now. And that's what kind of has me scratching my head here. I know we've said it, and I don't want to just belabor the point, but Jim Rutherford probably would have made three or four deals by now this season based on how it's gone. And the Penguins are watching everybody around them in this race get a little bit more solid. When you look at the wild card situation, it's them, yes, and it's the Capitals that they're still in those slots. But the Penguins only have a one-point lead. The Islanders made the Horvat deal, who are right there. Florida is still going to be a team that's going to turn it on at some point, I fully believe. And I anticipate Buffalo, they may not go all in, Tim, but I think they'll acquire somebody. But then ahead of the Penguins, the with what the Rangers have started to do, they've now won five straight. They're 7-2-1 in their last 10. They beat Carolina the other day pretty handily. The Devils look like they could maybe slip a little bit, but they're still pretty well. They're 7-1-2 in their last 10. So the teams ahead are winning. The teams behind are winning. I would say the Pens and Washington better get their stuff in order, get their houses ready here, because it's not going to be an easy spot for either of those teams to hold the wild cards if they don't start making moves and start making moves in the standings with regulation wins. Penguins almost never win in regulation.
Yeah, they never stay within regulation unless it's a blowout like we've seen the last two nights in either direction. All right, Mets, one more night of late-night hockey. Get the espresso machine ready, okay?
I'm looking forward to it. One more night, Owl Club. Be there with us. We'll be, you know, live and screaming well into the night. And if it goes like the last 10 p.m. start, we'll probably be finishing up somewhere around 1:30, 1:45. So we'll be there for you on the network.
Well, not for me literally, but for you in general. Yeah, right.
You'll hopefully be just finishing your 14th piece of the day.
That's usually how it goes. Maybe I'll sign off with you now that I say that out loud. All right, Mets, thanks a bunch. Appreciate it.
All right, my friend. Take care. Talk to you next week.
Brian Metzer, Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network.